The fourth, and best, of the fruits is that one shall speedily attain to release from the ties of this world. It means liberation from karma, the end of one's incarnations and reincarnations upon the earth system. When one has the last of the four fruits, when one has escaped from the toils of the earth, then one can, if one is foolish, volunteer to come back to this dreary old spot to help others. When you attain to that position, and you are on the other side, leave instructions that if you ever decide to volunteer, your friends will have your sanity tested, because it does appear that nowadays things are rather out of hand on the earth, and things are much too hard. However, we are in the age of Kali, and that gloomy age will pass away and the sun will shine again with the dawn of a new era, and with an upsurge of spiritual purity. G. Gayatri, this is the name given to a most important mantra. Christians recite the Lord's Prayer, which, after all, is just a Christian mantra. The Hindu recites the Gayatri. A Hindu will go through certain ceremonies, and then recite this mantra daily. Here are the actual words: Om, Ba, Bhuva, Swa. Tat Savita Varanam Bhargo Devasya Damahi. Dioyona Prakadi Ayat. Om. The meaning of this translated into English is, we meditate upon the ineffable effulgence of that resplendent Sunday May that sun direct our understanding for the good of all living. This is a mantra which could be recited by Christians with much profit. Ghost, that hairy thing which swishes around in the night with a few creaks and groans, and which causes the hair on our heads to stand straight up, is harmless. A ghost is just an etheric force which wanders about according to the habits of its previous owner, until eventually that etheric force, that etheric double, is dissipated. A strong healthy person who is suddenly killed by perhaps extreme violence, has a very strong etheric. If a person is being attacked, then he or she focuses the etheric into a strong entity. If, then, the silver cord is suddenly severed in that process which we call death, the astral body goes off, the physical body decays, and the poor etheric becomes a homeless, mindless, wandering waif. Throughout the whole life of the body, the etheric has been modeled on that body, it is a habit pattern of the body. So if the body was in the habit of going to a certain place, or thinking of certain people, then the etheric will do likewise, until perhaps during centuries the power becomes dissipated, and eventually vanishes. The etheric body is the one which attends seances and gives the so-called messages from beyond the grave. It is quite a tragedy really, because people on earth should realize that when we leave this world we have other things to do, and cannot always, and do not want always, to get in touch with people left behind. The etheric, or ghost, is a thing of no moment and should be disregarded. Supposing you were in some city and very busy with some special task requiring concentration, would you like it if some person kept phoning you from some other city, kept phoning you and asking you all sorts of stupid questions? You would soon get tired of the whole thing. In the same way, the real entities, whom, if you like, you can call souls, do not like being disturbed. They have too much else to do. Give, there is an old occult law which states, give that you may receive. If you do not give, you cannot receive. If you are too mean to give anything, or too selfish, then you lock a shell around yourself so you cannot receive even if a would-be giver is most anxious to give. In the Christian belief it is stated that as you sow so shall you reap. It is also stated cast your bread upon the waters. And yet again, it is more blessed to give than to receive. It is utterly, utterly essential that if you want to receive something, then you have to give something. Not necessarily money, you may have to give of yourself, that is, give love, give friendship, give attention, sympathy, give help, understanding. It is useless to say, what is mine, and what is yours I want to. Unless you are prepared to give, you cannot possibly receive. So, those of you who button up your wallets or make sure that your purse strings are drawn up tight, remember that if you are going on your knees to start praying, it is a waste of your time as well of everyone else's. It is useless to pray for things unless you are willing to give things. God, according to the Raja Yoga, there is no concept of a God. The Vedantas and the Bhagavad Gita state definitely that the yogi reaching liberation from the body finds himself as a god. For those who want to look it up, the term for God is Ishvara. Vedantic teaching is that all mankind is a part of God, and there are four main stages of approaching godhood. 1. Nearness to God. 2. Similarity to the teaching of God. 3. Associating with a God-like being. 4. Living with a God. According to the Christian belief, how many gods do you think there are? Have you read Genesis? If not, read where God said, "Let there be firmaments." In other words, God is commanding a second God to make the firmament, and the second God obeyed and made the firmament. Then the first God said, "Let there be light," and the second God made light, not electric light or gas light or daylight, of course, but spiritual light, the light which gleams at the end of our own long, long trail of the upward path of evolution. By the way, it is also worth remembering that many people read the Bible incorrectly. Most people believe that Adam was the first man created, but that is not correct. Read Genesis 4, 16 and 17, that shows Cain going forth into the land of Moab, and buying a wife. Now, if Adam was the first man created, how was it possible for Cain to go and buy a wife? There must have been another man connected with it all somewhere else. One should remember that many of the teachings of the Bible were written for a people who were not educated, not really able to think for themselves. Thus the Bible was written in simple language, often in parable form. Grantis, this peculiar word means a form of knot. There are three knots, the basal, the heart, and the eyebrow knot. In time everyone has to raise the kundalini in order to progress spiritually and metaphysically. Raising the kundalini means that one has to break through these knots. It means that one has to break free from physical lusts, free from physical desires and spites. When one has gone through the first of the knots, then one has to break through the ordinary higher mental desires. One has to do away with mental snobbery, for instance. Even some of the higher mental thoughts are concerned with selfishness, and before one can progress, one has to truly remember that race, creed, and color do not matter, for all men bleed red. And all men are equal in the sight of God. The third knot on the spiritual plane is breaking through to one's own real self, the over-self, and then one is far beyond the confines of the physical body. When one breaks the third knot, one does not need to come to this earth, except specifically to help others. It is worth commenting at this stage that so long as people think of will, willpower, and reason, then one is bound to the physical body just as is a person who always thinks of physical love and forgets that the real love is on the spiritual plane. Many people have asked about love on the spiritual plane. It is a pure love, an absolute love, and nothing can approach the feeling of being with one's own twin soul, because, although it is a horrible sounding term, twin soul, it is a very real thing indeed, and when one has one's twin soul in the over-self stage, then one is never forced back into incarnation but only comes back to help others. Gunas, there are three qualities which we simply must have. We must enter, progress through, and discard, passing ever higher and higher. First there is sluggishness and neglect. From neglect one experiences pain such as hunger or cold. From the pain or neglect effort results in order that there may be relief from hunger or pain. This effort produces pleasure, the pleasure of eating in order that hunger may be appeased. From the introduction to pleasure which comes when hunger is appeased, there arises a desire for pleasure, and thus a definite seeking for pleasure, causing energetic action which forms a habit, and the habit of restlessness. From the excessive habit of seeking after pleasure, and obtaining pleasure, pain and neglect arises and the body suffers therefrom. From seeking too much pleasure we eat too much, and we get a pain where we should not. This pain causes us to think, which in itself is quite a feat. We think along the causes of our pain, and then we decide not to do that which caused the pain, and sometimes we actually do refrain from doing harmful things. Most people do it just once more, but until they can cut out their just once's, no progress can be made. Progress can only be made when we eat to live and do not live to eat. Guru, that wondrous, misunderstood word merely means a weighty person. A guru means, in its commonly accepted term, one whose words are worthy of consideration. A guru is a teacher, a spiritual teacher, and he should be an illumined soul, one who has raised the kundalini and knows how to raise it in others. When the student is ready, the master will appear. The student cannot and should not and must not exclaim, as so many do, "Show me the great masters, let them come to me and I shall believe." The adepts who have remarkable powers of perception, whose faculties have been sharpened and purified, are not able to teach those who just bleat feebly that they, and they alone, are worthy of great teachers. Those immature, unevolved people who demand that a teacher accepts him or her as a pupil, well, they delay their own progress. It is worth a comment here to show what happens. I had a letter some time ago from England. Some idiot wrote in a most condescending manner stating that Mr. So-and-so is prepared to accept Lobsang Rampa as his teacher if Lobsang Rampa will give immediate proof that he can do all that he says. The attitude of Lobsang Rampa, and many others, is to toss such letters in the waste paper basket with a sigh of regret at the folly of those who write thus. A true guru, according to the full meaning of the word, is as rare as a horse with feathers, because the true guru must be more or less sinless, must be more or less without feelings of self, and must have no desire for fame. The poor fellow must, in fact, exist almost without being. It is permitted, of course, that the guru has enough to live upon and enough to see that he is decently clad. Remember, 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 when the student is ready, the master will appear. The student, being untrained, otherwise he would not be a student, is never, never, never in a position to say that he is ready to be taught. That is the surest way of saying that he is not. Group I. This refers to any male person studying under the same spiritual teacher. One should also give the name applying to a female, because nowadays the ladies, the so-called weaker sex, are often the stronger sex when it comes to spirituality. So, ladies, if you study under the same spiritual teacher, you are a group Arjini. Gurus are often referred to as master. That is completely and absolutely and utterly wrong. A guru is a guru, a weighty counselor, not a master. A master implies that one is forced to do what the master says. A guru advises and leaves the student full choice of action. So, please, never master, guru, counselor, advisor, teacher, or anything similar, but why not stick to guru? H. Habit. A habit is that action, or series of actions, which have become impressed upon our subconscious so that we may perform even intricate operations or maneuvers without conscious effort or the intervention of the conscious mind. The life and actions of most people is merely the following of habits. Most people could just as well be automatons. They get up at the same time in the morning because of habit, they do things at the same time of day because of habit. People smoke, even knowing that it is killing them, because of habit. Habit starts like the gossamer thread of a spider's web. One thread is weak and can easily be broken, but lay those threads side by side so that you have 100, 1,000, 1,000,000 threads, and one would be immovably bound, powerless, almost impotent to break the habit without really determined efforts. Look upon habit as upon a series of binding threads. Replace bad habits with good habits. That will make it like replacing each thread individually instead of trying to snap the whole. You cannot take away a thing without replacing it with something more suitable. If you are a pessimist, smile instead of scowl. It is easier to smile. Make a habit of smiling, make a habit of being kind to people, make a habit of being honorable and keeping your word. Soon you will be a different person, a person whom all will admire and respect. Habit is one of the most important things of life, and a good habit helps one, but a bad habit stultifies one's development. Halasana, this is sometimes referred to as the plow posture. It should be emphasized again that all these exercises really do not do anyone any good. Sometimes it is claimed that it develops spiritual discipline, but if one already has the discipline necessary to tie oneself in a knot, then surely that discipline can be directed into far more useful channels. Let me put on record that I regard all these exercises as crackpot inventions designed to lead one away from true progress. But if you want to try the plow posture, here it is. Lie on your back, keep your arms parallel and very tightly pressed against your body. Press your palms against the floor. Take a deep breath, you will need it. And then raise your legs and move them up and over your body so that your legs are over your head and your toes are touching the ground beyond the top of your head. Raise up your body as much as possible, and put your arms around your head. This particular exercise makes one assume the shape of an old-fashioned plow. If you want to do shapes, etc., etc., it is much more comfortable to have a darkened room and a white wall, and put your hands between a lighted candle and the wall. Then you can make all sorts of shapes in shadow, rabbits and cats and things like that. It's much more fun and much more comfortable. Hari, sometimes people call Vishnu by that name, but actually Hari means to take away. The mistake arose in an original translation because Vishnu was alleged to remove sins and faults by love and wisdom. Actually, of course, we can only remove faults and sins ourselves by adopting the right attitude to life, and towards others. There are other meanings attached to Hari. Hari Bol, this means chant the name of the Lord that ye may be purified and your sins may be washed away. Hari Om, this meaning of Hari is that of a sacred syllable, or actually, to be strictly correct, sacred syllables. By repeating Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Om when one is alone, of course, one's own personal vibrations may be increased, one's spirit may be elevated, and so one approaches more closely to one's God. Friendly advice: if you try any of these syllables or exercises, then do it when you are alone or people will look at you suspiciously and send for the man in the white coat which ties at the back. Harmony: there are stated to be three powers of divinity. Harmony is one of those powers. It is necessary to have all organs of the human body in harmony with all other organs in the body. If you have that, then the result is a person who is well balanced and healthy. A person with harmony in the mind is one who has pure love and compassion for others, and that person is able to assist others without thought of self-gain. If all people of this world had harmony within them, this would indeed be the golden age. Because then there would be no difficulty in following the rule which says, do as you would be done by. The yoga, this is just a series of exercises, a system of physical exertion. It is meant to give one mental or spiritual discipline, or something like that, but it is concerned only with postures of the body and need not be taken in any way seriously. It should be borne in mind that the true masters of the occult, the true adepts, never go in for this the yoga stuff. According to the people who do try these stunts, ha means the sound of a breath going in, and th is the sound of the breath coming out. The real evolved person does not go in for these circus turns without, of course, being in a circus, and these rather stupid exercises merely take one's attention from that which is more essential, spirituality and the desire to help others. The practitioners of these exercises have a wholly inflated idea of their own importance, but that only means that spiritually they are very poorly evolved. There are systems of yoga devoted to the attainment of spiritual perfection, of course, but the yoga is not one of them. Head, apart from being that knob which protrudes from the end of the neck and bears the organs of sight, sound, and smell, the head also contains the mechanism through which one can receive messages from the overself, and transmit messages to the overself. The head is a rather delicate contraption which suffers from the fact that all blood supplies, all nervous energies, must go through a rather narrow channel in the already narrow neck. It follows that the head should be well balanced so that there is no undue constriction of the spinal cord. A very good exercise to get balance of the head is to put two or three heavy books on the head, and provided that you can keep them there long enough, put your hands on your hips out of the way, and then walk up and down the room several times without shedding the books in the process. This is not to be confused with any hatha yoga exercise, but this is a definite thing to enable one to attain poise. It will help your poise, and will also help your posture. It will cause you some pleasurable surprise, too, that you can walk up and down with a load of books on your head. If you want to do things properly, have a basin of ice-cold water on your head, because then you have an incentive to do it seriously. In the East, the small boys who are going to be monks of any kind sometimes have a bowl full of hot wax in which there is a lighted floating wick. The wretched boy walks up and down the corridors with this bowl on his head. If he cannot balance, and the bowl spills, the hot wax goes on his clothes and he spends the next day scrubbing them clean. Only small boys, and possibly small girls, do these things. The person who has progressed, even a little, does not have to indulge in such things. Healing, when we refer to healing, we do not intend to indicate the stuff dispensed by the local doctor. Our reference to healing is that process carried on by the etheric double during the physical sleep of the material body. The material body gets a lot of misuse and abuse during the day, so when the astral body is out wandering during the night, the etheric double carries out the work of the repair man, or repair woman, whichever the case may be. Certain people have healing power, which means that they possess a superabundance of etheric energy which they can pass to another person with a deficiency. Thus it works in much the same way as a blood transfusion, only in this case one transfuses energy and the willpower which is necessary to make a sick person decide to recover. Higher self, this is our over-self, the piece of us which controls the physical body from afar. We, down here on earth, are pulling the chestnuts out of the fire for our over-self. It does not matter unduly if we get our fingers burnt, because our fingers have to last a few years only, but the over-self has to last throughout eternity and a bit longer. We can feed the spirit part of us by meditation, by contemplation, and by seeing the good which we have learned through the incarnate experiences. We have to develop love and good sense. We must develop and practice understanding. We must avoid doing those things which cause pain and distress to others, for although while on this world it is easy to delude other people, to lead them astray, and although possibly we are so clever that we are immune to the laws of the earth, yet when we once pass beyond the confines of this earth, we find that we have to pay for all the misery we have caused others, we have to pay for all the losses which we have inflicted upon others. Thus it is, in common sense terms, cheaper for us to behave ourselves while on this earth, because this is just a blink of the eye compared to the greater life beyond. Sin, this is a Chinese word meaning good faith, meaning that we must act so that those around us have respect for us, and so that our behavior enhances instead of detracts from the stature of the human race. Xuan Sui, this is a very deep metaphysical concept and doctrine which started in the 3rd century in China. It is a doctrine of mystical experiences which in some ways resemble Egyptian mysteries, but it is not often practiced now because of the long, long years of study necessary. Of course, when one is able to do astral traveling consciously, one can go in the astral and learn there in the matter of minutes all those things which takes the Xuan Sui student a lifetime. One of the ordeals which those students had to undergo was this: before a student could pass into a higher grade, he was killed, and the astral allowed to go free. By special methods, the blood was maintained in the brain so that no brain damage occurred. But the student had great experiences in the astral, and was then revivified. The awakened student was never the same after. Knowing what was the other side of life, he was more careful of his own actions, particularly how his actions affected the lives of others. Hypnotism. Most people do not realize the terrible force latent in hypnotism. Hypnotism should never, never, never be used except under the most stringent conditions. Any person, unless he has been specially trained, can be hypnotized. It does not matter if the person is extroverted or introverted, any person can be hypnotized. Hypnotism is a state of heightened awareness. The person hypnotized is aware only of that person who has hypnotized him. He is unable to determine between right and wrong. A person who is going to be hypnotized believes that he can be hypnotized. He may not believe it consciously, but subconsciously he believes he can be hypnotized, and so his state of tension actually helps to hypnotize him. In hypnotism, a form of disassociation occurs. The small part of the entity which is conscious of right and wrong is driven away, confined, restricted, removed from the scene of operations, leaving behind the 9/10 of the subconscious. The subconscious is like some blundering great lad who has no reason, who is not able to tell right from wrong, but somehow has obtained a lot of information and the power to move about. With the sensor, or 1/10 of the mind, out of action, there are no limits to what the 9/10 will do. The person doing the hypnotizing can persuade the subject, the one hypnotized, that the fully loaded revolver which the latter holds is just a toy water pistol. Thus, if the hypnotizer convinces the hypnotized person's subconscious that it is all a joke to pull the trigger and squirt water, then the hypnotized subject will pull the trigger and kill the object of the attack. It is a terrible thing to hypnotize a depressed person, and to assure that person that he or she is now happy, because it can make neurotic habits very much stronger, and it can bring about suicide. The person who goes to parties and hypnotizes just for the fun of it is a menace who should be removed to a padded cell because he can cause others to go to a padded cell. Almost anyone can be hypnotized, and when a person has been hypnotized several times, that person can be made to do anything at all. It is all a matter of suggesting the action in such a way that the hypnotized person believes that he or she is doing good. Then, having been so persuaded, the hypnotized person can be made to do anything whatsoever the hypnotizer desires. Statements to the contrary are designed merely to cover up the terrible danger which exists in hypnotism. Hypnotism is actually a crime against the overself, because it is a crime to tamper with the mechanism which the overself controls. It can cause one to have a karma which will take incarnation after incarnation to clear up. So if any of you have a desire to hypnotize, or to be hypnotized, think again, and then refrain. In the hands of a genuine specialist, not a stage performer, hypnotism can be used successfully to probe past incarnations. A person, always in the presence of witnesses, of course, and with a tape recorder running, can be progressively hypnotized and asked questions about different ages even before being born to this earth. It takes a very, very great deal of experience before the hypnotist is safe to undertake such things. Auto-hypnotism, this is a process under which a person is able to disassociate the conscious and the subconscious, and in which the conscious part of one acts as the hypnotizing agent. Under certain conditions, it is possible to correct bad habits of character and to strengthen good habits. But, again, one should not normally indulge in auto-hypnosis unless one has first had a thorough medical examination to make sure that one is sound physically, and, let me add, mentally. Hypnotism is a sword with three edges instead of only two or one, and it should be left well alone except by the accredited experts. This is the long way to say willpower. Actually, it is not just the power which enables one to say, I can and I will, but is, instead, rather more like the electric waves generated by the brain, and which can, literally, galvanize one into a special form of activity. It is the special power which enables the adept, who is breathing correctly, to accomplish levitation. Levitation is quite possible, and rather easy to do, especially if one really has a sound reason for it. This willpower is that which enables us to see into the future, or into the probable future, and which enables us within a limited extent to pre-order future occurrences. It is the power by which so-called coincidences take place. There is no actual Western term for this, but it is a special power of the will acting at the instigation of the overself which enables the physical body and the astral body to cooperate to an unusual extent to produce certain effects. Ida, this is a column of sensory and motor nerves on the left side of the spinal cord. These nerves, or bunches of fibers, have a special place in the relationship between the physical and astral bodies. The fibers coil around and end at the left nostril.